If you see the Buddha, kill him. Indeed, I believe we have to go beyond identification. And indeed, I believe we have to even go beyond samadhi. To identify to the Buddha while meditating is a trap for the mind. And to sustain that we are practicing a specific samadhi means it's a limited samadhi.
Already we have created a persona, and that persona, and that is the trap. What I think, what people call that we are living in a cage. The only cage that really is existing is not a matrix, is not a system. The really cage we are living in is the own identity we are giving up.
Yes, I believe.
Welcome to the Voices of the One Mind, where the elixir of wisdom flows freely. Join us as we dive into the profound thoughts of extraordinary human beings who embody wisdom, offering insights that serve as a bridge to awakening. Unshackling minds from the chains of suffering, our conversations pave the way for enhanced health, enriched lives, and exponential spiritual growth. Get ready to sip on the nectar of the One Mind with us.
Welcome to our today's episode on the Voices of the One Mind. I have a very, very interesting guest here with me, another voice of the One Mind, a dear friend of mine. He is a Swiss national record holder, many records in free diving, and he is a Zen monk. And we want to dive with you today into a very interesting topic around identification. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you, Bear.
Welcome, Kosho-san.
Yes, Kosho-san. Hello, Bear. Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's really a pleasure to have you here in the studio. We have done one recording already online.
Yes.
And I said, no, man, you need to come over and we need to talk.
Yes.
We need to be together and we want to do together a beautiful sharing with people.
Yeah, I'm happy to fly to you.
It's yeah.
Really sweet to host me.
You came up with the idea that one of our conversations will be about identification.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very interesting topic. How do you perceive identification? Or how do you perceive that topic around identification? Yeah, what is identification? How would you define it?
Yeah, this is it, you know? Like, I've been like one day offered a book by an ex-military of the special forces, foreign legion, okay? And this guy came to the temple to have like a retreat, and one day he gives me that book, and it's a manual for meditation for special forces. The kind of book you don't have access to, okay? It's like military library. And at the beginning, I'm a little bit disinterested. I'm more attached to like formal books about meditation and typically Zen. And I open the book, and one of the first sentences of the book speaks about samadhi. Eventually, the word you have heard, like when we practice meditation, we practice samadhi, or some people will say the samadhi of that, the samadhi of enlightenment, the samadhi of awakening, all this kind of like samadhi stuff. My master had spoke about it, but there was still an unclear vision of what is really the samadhi. Is it enlightenment? Is it practice? Is it awakening? And then this book, this military book, says samadhi means identification. And I got massively shocked because that means I had to think about the signification of what is identification and why would be spiritual practice, enlightenment or awakening a form of identification. I was not understanding that. And then when we talked together about which subject we wanted to go a little bit deeper in, I heard different of your videos speaking about the turmoil in the one the world is now about. And I stand to believe that humans, not only as a term of humanity that eventually we'll talk about, but individualistically speaking, I believe that there is an identity crisis. And we can have an identity, but the process of creating an identity is identification. And nowadays, it's like there is a complete freedom about identification. You can be whatever you want. Okay? Ultimately speaking, you can eventually even pretend to have the gender you want. So this is why I thought it was an interesting discussion, because of course we are also acting as personas, as eventually leaders of an understanding of a certain kind of enlightenment or awakening. And I wonder how spirituality, with its knowledge about identity and identification, could help the individuals, the daily individuals, the common individuals, to reconsider that process of identification and to eventually make it more useful or worse. So this is why the subject sounded to me interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. So for me, I always try to look, when we talk about any subject, when there is a topic, when there is an issue, I always try to look, to go as deep as possible to find the root cause of it, or where is this idea of identifying oneself, so where is it coming from? I mean, if you look over the history,
yeah.
How identifying oneself has changed.
Yes.
Only if we go back a few hundred years, you would be the son of.
Yeah, okay.
In your name.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like in the Nordic countries.
Yes, I would be Svensson. Mackenvin, yeah, something like this, yeah.
Svensson, for example, the son of Sven. And, or you go to Russia, you have the Ova, the woman of.
Yes.
Yeah? The women. So there was more the identification of a family. The point I want to make is this identification, humans tried to get always more and more and more precise in their identification.
Yes, they do.
The beginning of human life on Earth, there was no identification whatsoever. And everything became always more identified.
Yes.
Because also science has done a big part in that identification, right?
True.
Yeah, we want to know, and then we give a name to a flower.
Yes. Science and spirituality did the same work of trying to pinpoint what would be your identity. You are a monk, you are a shaman, you are a healer, you are an empath, you are a psychic.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what does this I would actually say, let's for a moment divide these two words. See it separately, identity and identification.
Yes, okay.
Right?
Yes, okay.
Because an identity, it's something different. An identification is if I say, okay, I can identify this as a parsley, a leaf.
Yes,
I can identify this as a parsley.
Okay.
The identity is more what one gives to itself, right?
Yes, this is what is interesting. Do you really think that an identity is something you can give to yourself? Like, what is alimenting the turmoil of the world today is indeed that ability of the self to identify to something you want. Today, not to make some bad jokes, but I can identify to a Filipino squirrel. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I'm not a squirrel, and even less Filipino. So,
why you are not a Filipino squirrel? I just want to go in there. Who defined what is a Filipino squirrel? So what you are saying is that what we know as being a squirrel animal, that I am not.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
But at the end of the day, we can argue whether that color is green, is gray.
Yeah.
Or whether the color is red, and then you say it's obvious that it's gray.
Yeah.
No, it's not obvious that it's gray. It's just humans have agreed amongst each other to call this tone gray.
Yes.
Right? And so it's with all these kind of identities that we have given ourselves identities, and hence we also needed to give identities to everything that surrounds us.
Yes.
In the 3D, to have an identity has become kind of a survival strategy.
I would agree with that. In the world we live in, I understand that people would tend to redefine their identity to survive better. Still don't believe survival mode is the best way to experiment life.
Absolutely, fully. Absolutely, because it's the opposite of striving in life, if you're constantly in surviving. The question what I want to go into is, or find out with you, is where did this notion grow or come from, sprout from, to identify? Why do I need to say I am this? I don't want to go at this point into I am a man, I'm this. Just the fact, you know, I come from there, I have this nationality, I have this passport, this is my job, this is all this persona that we create around us. And for me, one thing is very clear, and has actually been clear since I'm a child. The more I give myself identities, the less I'm open for the wholeness.
Yes.
Because I'm constantly thinking, whatever, I'm a cameraman. And then my whole perceptual thought goes so deep into that I literally start to believe that I'm a cameraman.
Yeah.
And then my whole life will be a cameraman.
Yes.
And when somebody asks me, who are you? Yeah, my name is Frank and I'm a cameraman. And I'm from Germany.
Yeah.
And already we have created a persona, and that persona, and that is the trap. What I think what people call that we are living in a cage. The only cage that really is existing is not a matrix, is not a system. The really cage we are living in is the own identity we are giving up.
Yes, I believe you're totally right. More the reflex of like changing your identity would eventually be to give you a way out of the cage you're having, and by creating a new identity, by identifying yourself to a new being, a new title, a new gender, a new species, is actually slowly and slowly shrinking your ways to simply having a formal change of behavior, and not even. So indeed, the process of identification, which is strange, understand, because at the beginning, if I got sensitive about identification, because it was associated to samadhi. And samadhi is supposedly the most broadening aspect of spiritual practice. I am identifying to the limitless universe itself. That's what we would call a samadhi. But if samadhi is identification, we take the risk of identifying to something which is not the whole. So you asked where it could have come from. Not that I'm a specialist of paleontology, and eventually a monkey one day heard his thoughts and thought that was different. I don't really know, but in the context of Buddhism, eventually the fact that we idealized the Buddha, we eventually created some envy of being like him. Okay, and so we started to create a closer and closer identity. Okay, in order to become like the Buddha, you have to become a monk. So you have to espouse the identity of being a monk. And when you are a monk, you can eventually practice meditation as if you were the Buddha, trying to identify to the Buddha himself. Okay? Also, if I want to bring in with you that subject of identity and identification, is that in the process of identifying to this identification, the self is involved.
Absolutely.
The self is involved. By definition, it can't be whole. Okay? So I wonder if all the negative judgments people have against each other nowadays are like, of putting them into a category. You are a monk, so you live like that. You are a woman, so you live like that. You are a guru, so you live like
that. You are Italian, you sure eat pizza all day.
Yes, exactly, and pasta at night. Okay? And in the same time that we have that identity crisis, we have a burst of psychological judgment over that identity people create. Meaning, if I say, for example, I'm the best, which I like to do, mm-hmm. I'm the best. Oh, this monk is arrogant. And certainly, if it's a trait of his characters, he's certainly a narcissistic monk, okay? And by now, we invite, in the same time, the people to redefine their identity, but in the same time, the criterion of being selfless are getting harder and harder and harder. So there is no... Not that I want to bring, like, any final point in my mind, but there is no possibility to become free, spiritually speaking, or even socially speaking, by defining a new identity and creating a new identification. Which, in the case of spirituality, is still strange, because that would mean samadhi is not enough. So...
Is it not? I mean, you were talking about in Buddhism, is it not when you meet the Buddha, kill the Buddha?
Yeah, there is some sayings like that, but this is typically in Zen Buddhism, not in Buddhism itself. Okay, Zen, when I was younger, now you go in the dictionary, you look Zen, you have 5 pages of description of what it is. But in the 80s, when I first looked what was Zen, it was just one sentence, neo-Buddhistic sect. Okay, so when the guys, the Zen monks, they start to say, if you see the Buddha, kill him, the Buddhists, they were like, yeah, the Zen monks, they are a little bit special, okay, a little bit too extremistic. Indeed, I believe we have to go beyond identification. And indeed, I believe we have to even go beyond samadhi. To identify to the Buddha while meditating is a trap for the mind. Is a trap for the mind. And to sustain that we are practicing a specific samadhi means it's a limited samadhi.
Is it not about the whole spiritual path? Again, if you look at from the wholeness of all things, it also the spiritual path is nothing else than, you could even call it a hobby. I like more that hobby than another one. It's maybe a hobby that is more conscious than just eating, working, and sleeping. Let's put it that way. You said samadhi is not enough.
Yeah.
But let's stay with samadhi.
Yeah.
The moment a human goes into samadhi, is also leaving. It's the point where it's leaving the body.
Yes, you're right. This is it. I believe that this is the way. I believe that by practicing the body, involving the body in all practice, that they are mental, emotional, social, spiritual, or even digitally speaking, I believe that one of the safest way to achieve beyond samadhi is by getting back to the body. I tend to believe that the people tempted by identification have lost track of their metabolism, physiology, and body in itself. Understand? I could identify as young. If I look inside of my body, if I dive deep inside of my body, I will slowly get to the point that, well, I'm not this young anymore. Okay, my wounds don't heal this fast. My mind is not as sharp as before. But the fact that I identify as young would not really make that I become young. Now, if I eventually, and maybe that is your field and expertise where you're more gifted than I do, because you know about healing, about mystical recoveries, and me, not this much. Huh? I see the people suffocating slowly until they die, not suddenly shining and being 20 again. Let's say if the samadhi itself, if the practice, the spiritual practice, the identification to the self goes beyond its identification point. Eventually, you would become young. You would become young. Or if you, well, me, I'm formally ordained monk. Okay, but let's take a lambda person that would identify to a monk. Mm-hmm. I identify as a monk. Okay, show me your papers of ordination. No, I have no papers. I simply identify to a monk. Eventually, the person identifying this much to a monk and overpassing, let's say, the limit of self-identification, eventually would see modification in its life, in his life, if we speak about a monk, and would suddenly be confronted to the possibility of receiving the ordination and becoming formally a monk. Okay? Now there is, I don't think everybody needs to become a monk or a nun in his life for the humanity to change. Would you agree to an identity? Would you validate an identity without a specific process which is admitted as being the validation process of that identity?
Okay, I think that the human being can generally dream to be everything that the human being wants to be. And here again, there must be the question, who defined that somebody sitting so and so many thousand hours, then he is a monk?
Yeah.
There are people who are training marathon.
Yeah.
For their whole life. They are in the running association and they are in the school and they train and they train. And then comes this African guy who has not even runners, he's just barefoot,
yeah,
has never really trained in a team, never. And on the Olympics, this guy just runs away from all the other people.
Yeah.
So, meaning he has become an Olympic medalist.
Yeah.
I just put an extreme example now, but without any practice.
Yes. Yes.
So, I could answer the question with yes. I think somebody could be a monk if we have a definition what a monk is, and the person lives a monk life, he could also define himself as a monk without having gone through, as you say, the
Now I understand the question you asked me before, like who would define. You said the word, like what define. Don't you think that the 21st century crisis and engagement into identity is not disruptive from our human traditions and kind of, in a way, well, maybe I'm 100% wrong, but some kind of wisdom?
So the answer is always yes and no in the same time for me, because absolutely there is wisdom.
Yeah.
And there is what we call the ancient wisdom, the wisdom of the elders.
Yeah.
And they have lived in a certain way. If we also dig a little bit deeper, I have been living over many, many years with Native American people. And what you can see also there, they what I call have cultural distortions, meaning they are bringing with them a backpack of cultural ideas over hundreds of years, which I even 300 years ago would not have agreed to it.
Okay.
Let alone today, doing certain practices that I don't think are in the highest interest of benevolence to human life. So. Yes, there is the wisdom, and there obviously have been built up by generations a certain way of what is the best way to live. And on the other hand, what I see in the world of today, it's just confusion.
Yeah.
I don't even see that the world is in an identity crisis. I mean, you can call it a crisis, but it's more like a mental crisis. It's more like a completely turmoil confusion.
Yes.
And on the other hand, I think it needs sometimes this confusion, this turmoil. It needs this walking on the shadow side of the soul, as one calls it, in order to have the big bang and have the you know, the enlightening moment in life.
Yeah.
You see? So the awakening and the enlightening might also be triggered out of this chaos, of this, you know, confusion that people have. And when we come to crisis, or let's talk about identity crisis, people, men call themselves women and so on, you know. I think it's more like a topic that for sure there are beings on this planet, and these beings have been over thousands of years in all kind of societies, also in native people societies, that they were born into a physical expression of a man. Mm-hmm. But during their, let's say, whatever, 10, 15, 21st years of their life, they have found out that their hormones and everything what is in there, that their psychology is not that of a man, but is that of a woman.
Okay.
And then they are really in conflict. You see? Because their mind is the whole, it feels completely uncomfortable, and it feels completely... And eventually these people at one stage, some of them decide, okay, I go the full way. For example, I take an operation and I also... become physically that woman that I felt to be my whole life.
Yeah.
When we look what is happening the last 3 years, and it only started the last 3 years, because before this kind of movement that we have in the world was not there.
Yeah.
I think this is a big confusion. This has nothing to do with what I just said. The confusion here is that young people are taken where they are in their puberty, and they are anyway in the puberty having all kind of flashes coming into their mind. I mean, whoever is a parent like I am of two adult children knows what how children are behaving when they are in puberty. Mm-hmm. And when you go through this, let's say, also turmoil of the puberty, where you just don't like your parents, and you want to fight with your parents, and you want to be a revolutionary, and you want to do everything different, and you know, even the expression on your skin, you know, you get pimples and all these kind of things is so much of a confusion and an attack. If you then take a person like this, and let me put it that way, apply some mind influence, it is very easy to go in there. It is very easy to go in there. And it's very easy to put thoughts in the brain of that person. Let's put it with one word, it's manipulation.
Yes, okay.
So I don't think that humanity is more in any identification crisis now than it was ever before. I think the difference now is that there are methods of mind manipulation, and so many people get trapped in that mind manipulation and all of a sudden start to question them, hey, maybe I'm not a man, you know?
Yeah.
You do the same thing with an 18-year-old, and the person says, what? Of course I'm a man. I mean, I feel like a man, it's natural to me. This is only on the very surface now what's coming out of the general deep question that we need to ask ourselves as a human being is always, for me, the question, who am I? And who am I doesn't start with the gender. Who am I is not a question of the gender. You are the universe itself that expresses through life, and everything that you perceive unfolds in front of you in your dream. The further I come away from that, knowing that who am I, the further you are getting distracted with all kind of things and possibilities that are here on this 3D realm. And that will go on like crazy in the next years with all this AI/algorithmic intelligence, because there is no such thing as artificial intelligence. It's just an algorithm. But this algorithm is so powerful, right, that it will influence the way of human life quite a lot.
Yeah.
And it's again, how people feed this algorithm, that's what you get out. And then we are back again, how I feed the universe with my thought, and that is exactly what is unfolding in front of me in my life. And I think what is happening now with this AI is just a fantastic, perfect manifestation of that fact that I create my own world. I create my own world because with the thoughts that I have, if I have, for example, the whole time worrying thoughts, what world do I create around me? I only create that world.
Yeah.
If we have wars in the world, why do we have the wars? Do we have the wars because five people say we want to fight against other five people, we don't like them? No, absolutely not. For a war, you need 10,000 of people and you need the agreement of a million of people. Otherwise, no war ever happens.
Yeah, okay.
And how does that war happen? Everyone has his own war going on at home, with the family, with the partner, with the neighbor, at the cash desk. You have some kind of wars going on. This little speck, negative energy, I always explain it like there is a big cloud. It's going into that big cloud. Like, imagine there's a big cloud up there. And all humans, all their little wars that are going on, they are stored in that iCloud up there.
Okay.
And that one day that iCloud bursts open and rains down. Meaning, the universe understands only energy, frequency, and vibration. The universe doesn't understand language.
Okay, yeah.
So I can say, I don't want the war, right? But if the energy doesn't fit to what I say, and if I'm not doing to what I say, the universe doesn't hear it. The universe hears the opposite. And then we have that big cloud distorted full of all kind of little detrimental, worrying, fighting energy. One time it bursts open, it's all our inside small wars that we have been going on that create bigger wars in the world. That is how I see the world. I don't see the world that one country is attacking with the tanks another country.
Okay.
Of course, on the physical plane that is happening.
Yeah.
But long before the physical plane, you need the whole chess game of energetics.
So you think like the what I would have called the identity crisis, do you think it's like a natural process of evolution?
I have to say absolutely yes, because under the big blue sky, as the Mongolians say, everything is natural. There is no something that is like everything comes.
Yeah.
You know, whatever happens is in a way a natural process.
So what would be the maybe I know you are a visionary. Okay, you have the possibility to foresee a little bit what's going to come. So what is that identity turmoil, crisis, as I called it? Do you have an idea where it's going to lead us? Yeah. As like, are we going to through the process of being like a chaos of individualistic identification? Are we going to create a new identity for humanity, for example, and feel again as one after after the storm comes good weather, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say if we are now in a storm of individual identity, is it that, let's say, the hidden goal behind it would be to recreate a new humanity identity?
As one of my identities is to be a sailor.
Yeah.
I've been sailing around the world many years, as you know. There is the 12 Beaufort scale of the 12 is the highest storm. It's an orkan, very crazy, right?
Yeah, okay.
And number one is very still, not even.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So if we stay in that, I assume we are at around 9 to 10. Is the storm that's what even there you only start to call storm. The 10 is only a storm.
Okay.
11 is an orkan like storm.
Yeah.
And 12 is an orkan. So
yeah.
So what you would call a tornado in English.
Yeah.
So I think we are around 9, 10 now.
Okay.
Right? And after 12, there is always one, always.
Yeah.
So we have to first reach 12.
Yeah.
In order to arrive at one again.
Yeah.
At this very moment, at least from the perspective of the human collective, it's not possible to have a peaceful planet from one year to the other, from one moment to the other.
Yeah.
It would be possible, of course, with one snap. The Native American have a very nice saying. They say with one flapping of the wings of a butterfly, the whole climate of the world can be changed.
Yes.
This is literally that the human being can change the whole world. But the change has to only come from here. The change has not to go into politics, to read things, to vote for something. Now I can vote as much as I want. The war will only stop the moment I stop my war. And we all have some certain wars going on in us.
Yes.
And only when I go into that state of the zero point, in that moment we are over the Orkan and we come back to
zero.
That's what I see, but I cannot give you any time scale in what that will happen. I mean, if we align with the prophecies of most of the, they are all aligning at the same point. Native peoples are First Nation people around the world, be it the Mayans, be it the Blackfeet, be it the Maori, you know. At one stage they come together and they have this prophecy of saying, at the time when the rainbow children are born, the world unite again as the rainbow people. And from that moment on, we have peace.
Yeah.
But before of that, is in these prophecies, a huge, huge, huge trauma.
What is rainbow children?
Yeah, that's the point. Because
when you say that, I think two things. I think about Greenpeace, they were rainbow warrior, and we fight against the bad guys that destroy the world.
Yeah, yeah.
But then now the rainbow flag is like the liberation of gender flag.
So first of all, we have the rainbow as a natural lightning spectacle on the sky, right?
Yes, yes, totally.
Okay, and then we have the rainbow flag.
Yeah.
And where is the rainbow flag coming from?
I have no idea.
The rainbow flag was made in the surroundings of the summer of Woodstock in 1969.
Okay.
And there were a group of Native American elders coming, and they from Woodstock would create the Rainbow Tribe. That was originally in the United States. Now you have rainbow festivals all around the world. You have probably heard about these rainbow festivals. But these rainbow festivals are like, how to say, sons or daughters of the original rainbow initiative that a council of Native American elders created and said, this is the tribe sitting around the holy fire.
Okay.
And when people meet to sit around the holy fire and be in a sacred space, like a satsang, creating that holy space, that we will call the rainbow people. And then they took the color from the rainbow and made that flag.
Okay.
Right? And obviously, whenever we're talking about later about peace and about doing good things, this rainbow flag was used and many times misused from the original meaning.
Yeah. It's also used in some Buddhist lineage. The Tibetans around the Dalai Lama have also used the rainbow flag as saying it's a Buddhist flag or some kind of peace flag.
Yeah. Might be. It is very misused nowadays, if you want to call it misused, because now every bank, every big corporation has the rainbow flag.
Okay.
Yeah, really. Online program of banking, they have the rainbow flag.
Yeah.
I mean, the last institution that has something to do with the gathering around the holy fire around the rainbow is a bank. So you can see it from that dualistic perspective.
Mm.
But if we see it from a non-dualistic perspective, if that original intention of that rainbow flag is imprinted in that rainbow flag, it can never go. So whoever uses that rainbow flag, for whatever reason, will eventually be affected by that energy.
Good.
Be affected by the energy of peace.
Cool.
Be affected by the energy of coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we are just going now through a phase. And humanity will realize in a few years that this is probably not adequate.
Sorry to interrupt you. You trigger a question in me. So if I understand what you're depicting, like, let's say, the identity of humanity around the different aspects we mentioned is transient. is it the same for an individual? Wouldn't we have to advise people to understand that the process of identification itself is only transient?
Absolutely, absolutely. Let me give you an example of the Native American medicine wheel.
Yes, please.
You have seen probably a medicine wheel.
With the cross,
exactly. Yeah. So what is the medicine wheel actually, what is that actually for? For what is that? So generally they build medicine wheels bigger for the tribe. Normally every person makes his own medicine wheel. Mm-hmm. And you line up in your medicine, and this can take years that you have your medicine ready. A medicine wheel ready. You go by yourself, you sit, and then you have a certain practice, and you with the third eye, you look to the north. You don't need to face the physical north. Then you look to the north, and then, for example, you drum or you pray or whatever, and then you see a totem spirit coming up.
Okay.
And that will be your totem spirit that is sitting on a medicine wheel in the north. So slowly you build up your medicine wheel, so you have different totems in the different wind directions. You have different entities, like it can be the wind, it can be earth, it can be, you know, it can be water that sits in a wind direction, and so on. And what is the medicine wheel helping for? The center of the cross shows where you should be in life, in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And what you are is the center. But humanity has the tendency to go, we go too far north. But, okay, now we realized we go too far north. So we don't go to the center and stay there. No, first from the north, we have to run all the way to the south.
Yeah, okay.
And the medicine wheel is then you always sit down and you inquire in your life where you are standing at the moment. This is, for example, the totem in the east. It can be a buzzard, for example, and your eastern side is the fire side, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a meditation you realize, oh my gosh, I'm too far on the east.
Yeah.
So you line out practically your whole beingness on that medicine wheel. It's a process. And why do I say this? Because humanity is like this. Humanity is like So there is no invention because everything is there. But something is manifesting. Let's say like the peace flag, right? And then the peace flag is used for something, and all of a sudden, humanity is carrying that peace flag to the north. No. Here it's too cold. Boom! We run all the way to the south, and in that situation we are now. So the peace flag, metaphorically speaking, is now standing all the way in the south or all the way in the east.
Yeah. Okay.
Far away from the center.
Yeah.
The fact is the peace flag is still there and it is indestructible.
Okay,
the energy is still there.
Okay.
So humanity is just taking that flag to a wrong direction at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually the flag will come back to the center.
Yes.
And then people will remember that flag and have it imprinted, that flag.
Yeah,
and then people
beautiful.
Will understand what the flag really was standing for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this whole identity and identification, when a human is sitting down and asks the question, who am I? It is beyond the story. It is beyond the gender.
Yeah.
Because the question must be asked not from that me and I consciousness from the self, but the question must be asked for that what we call the one mind, from that perspective of the absolute reality, of the great spirit.
Yeah.
And if I ask, who am I from that perspective, all of a sudden I realize that I am dressed in 25 layers and it's too hot. You know, I have to get these layers off.
Yeah.
And again, metaphorically, it's too hot. You know, we are in an overheat with all our layers of all our stories that we give ourselves. And so what is for me the spiritual path is to take one jacket off and take another jacket off.
So your spiritual path will more sound like disidentifying.
Absolutely. Only. This is the only way. And if I look back to myself in the last 40 years, I have to admit I didn't do such a bad job. I'm completely not arrived.
No.
But when do we arrive?
Yeah.
However, if I look 10 years back, 20 years back, how much I have identified with my job, with my being, with being an entrepreneur, with having this and having that, which has been, which is really far away. I cannot see that anymore.
Okay.
You know? And so it is constantly taking one shirt off and one shirt off and one shirt off to come to that point. And exactly the opposite, the disidentification of everything leads to the liberation.
Yes,
and it doesn't lead to the liberation to say, you know, I look like a man, but I feel like a woman. Yes, okay, so be it.
Yeah.
But that should go in here and go out here.
Yes. You know, I had that intuition during meditation where, like, a lot of people ask me, like, what is the use of becoming a monk? Why would you take that identity of a monk? And I used to say, and I still say it, it's actually much more handy to go to the process. The first process will be identifying to the monk where you fall into the trap. Mm-hmm. I am a monk. It's not I am, he's a monk. It's that thing you call I is a monk. Mm-hmm. Okay, has taken the form of the monk. And then once you have, let's say, integrated that identity, it is actually much more easy to let go and disidentify from the monk for spiritual purposes of liberation than to try to get rid of yourself. When we were talking, like, if you see the Buddha, kill him, or worse, huh, people say, like, you have to kill your ego. And they try and they try and they succeed by failing almost. Okay? So I completely agree with you that let's say the safety process of the freedom process would be to disidentify.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is for me. I have seen in my own earth walk that the more I identify with things, I cling to things. I don't. It can be also things like a car or a house, but mostly like who you are. The more I am trapped and I narrow down and I'm the being is not open to perceive mystic experiences, the magical cosmos, you know, because you are trapped in your little story. Mm-hmm. And the more story you give yourself, the more you are trapped in that story. So going back to the metaphoric, the more clothes you wear on, the less you are flexible to move around, right?
Yes.
The less clothes I have, the more agile I am.
Yes.
And that is the same thing. The less identity I give to myself, the more agile I am. And all of that to say, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm this national, I'm this and this. Now you meet someone. The first
where
question,
are you from?
Where are you from? Is that it doesn't matter where in the world you go.
Yes, yes.
So this has become already normality to identify someone by where he has come from.
Yeah.
I mean, think for a moment how far we have come. I don't see the human being anymore. That is another reflection of myself, actually. So I'm playing just a role.
Yes.
I'm just playing a role in the taxi, speaking to myself, you know. The taxi driver is just playing a role. It's a reflection of himself that comes from another country. Oh, how interesting. Oh, yeah. So then, I come from Italy. Okay, vroom, the whole thing goes on. Okay, Italy,
I understand. Spaghetti,
fashion, Ferrari, drum.
Yes.
You know, all these stereotypes.
Yeah.
And as jokingly as I say it here, as profound it is, because people are not realizing in what kind of box thinking they are the whole day long.
Yeah.
Everything is identified in a box thinking.
Yeah.
The less we identify, the more we get to unfold our core being, the more we get in contact.
Would you say that the more we disidentify, the more we get in touch with what is our true self?
Absolutely, yes. And now the next question could be, what is our true self, right?
Yeah, totally.
What is our true self?
Totally.
So our true self, as I see it, is the source. And our true self is that's why also the podcast is called like this, the best of the answer I can give to that is the one mind.
Good.
It's the one
good
mind. There is only one mind, and the closest I come is, imagine the sun as being, is metaphorically, the sun as being the one mind. And the sun emits rays, sun rays.
Yes.
Right? And these sun rays actually cannot be seen. because the sun rays...
Yes, it's the entire light.
It's the entire light. The only moment you can make the sun rays visible is if you put two clouds.
Yes.
And then they shine in the middle.
Yes.
And then we are in the two or three dimensional field. Metaphorically speaking, when people say, what is the life about? Yeah, the life about is that the Great Spirit experiences itself. So we stay with the metaphoric, the light is shining, but only by putting two clouds, which only can happen here in the 3D, the Great Spirit can see its own light. Otherwise, yeah. it is omnipresent everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's not graspable for the human perceptual thinking. If the ray is the causal body, our causal body, which is infinite bliss.
Okay.
Infinite bliss and this cosmic consciousness. Cosmic with a K, not with a C.
Okay.
So C is the space.
Okay.
Like more the scientific explanation of the stars, and that's the cosmos, these all things.
Yes, okay.
And the cosmic is divine realm of, it's that space that is created out from the one mind. That's written with a K,
okay.
The cosmos. So on that, in that cosmos, there starts to form a causal body. And from that causal body, the causal body kind of takes a cloak on it, and that's the astral body. And the astral body then starts to have life force,
yeah.
Like prana.
Yeah.
And also has this infinite light.
Yeah.
And then this another cloak is hidden in a perishable human body.
Yeah.
And now the human body gets two things. The human body gets something like a free will and gets something like five senses. And then the chaos can start. Then the race can start. Because that is what you need on your race. This is the two things. And now the question is what you make out of it. You see?
Yeah.
Like if you have iron in your hand and then you can go. Do you make a weapon out of it and you want to kill someone, or do you build a shuffle and grow vegetables with
yeah.
it? Yeah. And it's the same thing. You have the free will, which is a big gift to a human being, and it's also on one hand the biggest curse. Now you can say we don't really have a free will because really we are incarcerated in a system. That's another type of free will. The free will I am talking about is that I have constantly the free will to say yes or no. Discernment.
Yeah.
Yeah. I constantly have the opportunity to have discernment on everything, right?
Yeah.
So even if the society says you have to do it that way, I only adapt to it because I want to please society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or I fear that I have consequences.
Yeah.
And then we have the five senses. And then with these five senses, we start to completely more and more and more, if we are not cautious, to always be in a very good connection with our causal body and the astral body, we start constantly to more and more and more to identify with our physical body.
Yeah.
And obviously, what means the physical body? It's not just that body. It means everything that the physical body perceives.
Inclusive the senses, you mean?
Absolutely. Mm. So the whole world, the trees, the plants, the work, the job, the neighbor, the everything, we start to identify in a way with all of that.
Yeah.
And more and more and more and more. And then we are literally trapped in that game.
Yeah, completely.
We are really trapped in that game.
What kind of practices or even like little inputs will you give as a spiritual leader? Which kind of practices will you give to the people to help them during the day? I will tell them practice 25,000 hours of Zazen and you will see, you will disidentify. But still, not everybody is having 25,000 hours. So what would you suggest as even as a gift of little practices that people could do to disidentify without having to identify to another spiritual realm?
Despair suggests just do a practice for one day, not use the word I and me. Try that for one day. And then if it worked, do it another day. It will cause big eyes with your family, with the people you're living with. You have to do workarounds.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find your way. And sometimes And this is the core where we want to arrive, is we realize, Mamma mia, this is so complicated to not use I.
Yeah.
The best is I just shut up.
Yes,
say
you know what, that makes me laugh, because one day my master said that. I was like enthusiastic during the meal and I was in the kitchen team, so the kitchen team is allowed to talk. And I blah, 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 blah. And then my master shouts from his table, Loic, I already told you, not start your sentences by I. And it came really, at the moment, I was really enthusiastic about expressing something about me. La, la, la. So I turned to him and I said, Dan, I better just shut up. So we both laugh. But indeed, it is very difficult to have any kind of like expression without including ourselves. So indeed, that would be the best way.
I did that practice when I was with my mentor in Los Angeles many years ago. When he gave us that practice, we were two, me and my friend there. We went into the city when we ordered a coffee and all these kind of things. You were constantly in the mind, you know, thinking really, oh, I need the I now. I need that to express myself. Mm. And just by this little practice, it will be very complicated. You have to do workarounds. You have to be silent many times. But just this practice shows how corrupted our language is,
yes,
in order to constantly trap us back in being that I.
Yes.
It has just to do with language, right?
Yes, totally.
And so, language definitely is a spell. You know,
I found two solutions, because of course, when my master said that to me, that was like almost like a personal attack. Don't start your sentences by I know my, let's say, my attraction for my own self and ego, and I think I'm beautiful and cool, la, la, la. So I observed him much more, seeing if he was able to start his sentence by anything else than I. And one day I had that intuition that he replaced the word I by the name of our practice, Zazen. Zazen is perfect. Zazen is the most interesting thing in the universe. And I was like, oh, this is a good idea. Instead of saying I could just say Zazen. And instead of saying I'm the best, I'm the way. I could say Zazen is the best. Zazen is the way. And I would let myself off of the trap I create for myself. This was very interesting. Like one mind is the way.
Yeah, one mind is the way.
Yeah.
So is a very good workaround, and it becomes integrated. It becomes integrated.
Yes.
And it does something. If you practice that and if you then integrate that in your normal speaking, it is very good. You can eventually come back to the I again.
Yes.
It's like, how do you say, you can... There is a saying, you can only marry if you don't need to marry anymore, because then you are ready. If you don't have that need anymore to go into a marriage, you know? But then you actually... Shop for food when you're not hungry. So this is the same thing. You can reintegrate it when you have let go of that notion that it creates. Another practice that goes a little bit in that direction is that you sit down and meditate and observe yourself.
Yes.
So you go approximately like a meter outside and then you turn around and then you look at the body. And then you look at the body from a meter of distance and then you try to go deeper and deeper, meaning coming closer like a zoom lens of a camera and trying to see, little eyebrows and you know, little things on your face and like this. And some people succeed quite immediately, and other people takes more time. However, when you are confident with this exercise, then one question has to arise. Who's
that?
Who was observing the body?
Yeah.
And then you can start to inquire.
Yeah.
Then is the inquiry the first step going to, who am I? Who is it that observes that body?
This is it.
Who observed that body?
That was the second solution.
I cannot be the body.
That started when we suddenly had, maybe you saw that, you now on the social networks, you have the possibility to choose your pronouns. Mm-hmm. So I decided on some social networks to change my pronouns to help me not to start my sentences with I and to increase the process of disidentification, and chose it mm-hmm. as a pronoun to disidentify myself. It's pretty funny. It's a pretty funny practice. If I ask you, Bear, are you okay? And your pronoun will be it. Simply because it's it, you can't use I anymore, and you would have to say, "Yeah, it's good. It's good. Feeling good.
It's good. It's perfect."
Yeah. At this moment, this distance towards the I will be helped. Mm-hmm. And in I make a lot of jokes with my students in freediving about that. When they ask me, this was the joke. I said, I identify as a reverend and my pronouns are it. So you're not allowed to ask me, are you okay? You must say, is it okay? And I would say, yes, it's okay. And nobody would be disturbed, individualistically speaking, about if I feel good or not.
I think, in a way, from a human, from a social perspective, humanity is on a good way, and we will still reach more storm in the next coming periods, much more storm. And eventually we are going into a more peaceful beingness together on this planet. I mean, if you look into the Vedic, the yogic traditional culture, where they have the yugas, you know, 26,000 years. Also there, it's in alignment with the rainbow prophecies of so many native tribes, First Nation tribes around the world, that we are now moving into an era, into an eon that is definitely more peaceful. But the ending is the overswap of the Kali Yuga is still is still strong, and we will, as humanity, surely get to feel that in the next coming periods. So, wrapping it up, what is the conclusion?
Wow, you know, I think what you said was very inspiring. Me, I've been raised into a very formal, way, where a monk is a monk, a nun is a nun, the master is the master, and all this through an intense validation process, the trap is very well made. You can't just go anywhere you want. So everything you said, first of all, gave me like a rebirth of peace inside of me, being like, it's not a crisis. It is not a crisis. You know, I'm a free diver, so me, I'm underwater. I don't know when it's the storm or when it's not the storm. I know when I need to breathe. That's all. And when you say, no, we are on storm level 9, not 10, not 11, not 12. So I'm already, the compassion with the one you expressed, let's say the ancient wisdoms around the rainbow children, made me understand that was like a higher process than what I could see because of my personal judgment on this identity stuff. So I understand that it's not this necessary first to observe or focus on the identity of what the people want to give to themselves, but that in order of getting more free, more acceptance, more compassion, more resilience, we have to make that effort of disidentifying ourselves. And that for that, we proposed like different exercises, like not starting the sentences by I or not including me, or taking that, let's say, exercises of envisioning ourselves from another point of view and then wondering who observes who. Of course, we can modulate the fact that 25,000 hours of objectless meditation, for sure it has its use, but it's long. And then I thought it was funny to add in the game, because it's part of the game of today, choosing your pronouns, to eventually choose a pronoun that does not contain an identity. Like, if I'm not a he, if I'm not a she, if I'm not they, but I'm it, then there is no problematic with the subject and the identification. I become an object for myself at this moment, and eventually can take more distance towards myself and realize the same realization that you spoke about these exercises. So thank you, Bert, because now I feel much more quiet about the misconceptions that I had about identity, and if I have a role to play, in a judgmental role as a monk to play in the self-giving identity. So thank you very much, first of all, for your input about that. And if I have to say a word, ending word for me, I'm really happy to see that the ancient wisdom is still alive and still has an incredible amount of inputs to give, so that we don't lose track of the center, like you mentioned it. Thank you very much,
babe. Appreciate very much. So I want to pick up that one sentence that Kosho-san just said, I am it, because I am it. I live a whole life to realize from the first day to the last day that I have always been this, what I am searching for, and I always was it. So thank you very much for these closing words. This truly is the big enlightenment, the I am it. Thank you very much for following us, for looking into our podcast. I hope it was giving you some insights, especially on the topic of de-identification and how you can train for yourself in daily life to become a little bit distant in the idea of you are the body, because you are not the body, you are so much more.
Thank you for joining us on this enlightening journey with another voice of the One Mind. We thank you for your support, and to ensure that you never miss a drop of this wisdom nectar, click subscribe and stay connected with us on the onemind.org. Until next time, may your path be illuminated with profound insights and growth.